Welcome back to the podcast. Glad you are with me this week. Yeah, it's been an absolutely beautiful week, right? We've had sun and warmth, and yeah, it has just been absolutely fantastic, right? I'm excited to get a chance to connect with you guys again here. And, you know, as we're going through, make sure you drop any questions you have about what we're talking about today. You know, Mondays, we do kind of Sunday on a Monday, walk through a passage of Scripture, right? And Thursdays, we are doing Beyond Sunday School. And so you're getting two podcasts each week here on the Love Well podcast, and hopefully both of them really help you take those steps towards loving well. Because, you know, loving our neighbors well, loving our enemies well, this is the heart of what it means for us to follow Jesus. As we look at the world, we must see our neighbors as those created in the image of God. We have to see our enemies as those created in the image of God. And so to love well really means to love those people around us and to care for them and to treat them with the kind of respect that those who have been created in the image of God deserve and the worth that they carry with them. So hopefully these two podcasts each week help you in that quest. I know preparing for them definitely helps me think about some things differently. So hopefully these do as well for you. Couple of quick announcements. Tuesday nights, I host Doubt on Tap with my good friend, Pastor Mike. He's a good dude, and we have a great time Tuesday nights at Doubt on Tap. We've been hanging out on patios for the last number of weeks with the weather being great. But as the weather gets cold, we are going to be moving our conversation to the Simple Theologian Discord. And the Simple Theologian, that's the title of our podcast and little community of folks that we are building through Doubt on Tap and the podcast and everything else. But our Simple Theologian Discord is where we will host Doubt on Tap virtually as the weather gets cold. So join us there. You can find the link to the Discord server on the Simple Theologian page. And you can get there by heading over to facebook.com/simpletheologian. Or if you can't figure it out, just ask me right here in the comments, and I will be sure to drop that link to you. All right. As always, please, I encourage you, head over here to danielmrose.com. Subscribe. Monday through Friday, you will get an email with the knee-jerk devotional. So every day, I take some time in the morning to read and respond to the scripture that I'm reading. And so these are literally kind of fresh thoughts, guys. This is not me having spent hours studying or anything along those lines. It is, you're getting fresh meat, fresh thoughts right here for you every morning, Monday through Friday, freshly tapped thoughts on God. So go ahead and subscribe and have that dropped in your inbox. Every once in a while, I'll throw something else into your inbox for you, but I don't want to overwhelm you. Don't want to be sending you too many emails, anything along those lines. But danielmrose.com, go ahead and subscribe, and that would be great. Also, you can find this podcast anywhere. You find it on YouTube. You can find it on Facebook, and you can also find it anywhere you listen to audio podcasts. So, give that a smash the subscribe button wherever you have bumped into this podcast. And please, I would encourage you, if you find this at all helpful, if you find this at all insightful, or even just helps you learn something, please share it with a friend. please go to Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, rate and comment. That would be so helpful for me. So let's get after it here. I guess before we do, let's just get after it, right? And let's dive in here to Beyond Sunday School this week. We are continuing our conversation on Vaughn Roberts' book called God's Big Picture, Tracing the Storyline of the Bible. You can get it on Amazon, super cheap. Definitely recommend it. It's a great resource to have as you continue to try to understand the Bible and all that good stuff. This is just it's a fantastic resource. So definitely get out there and grab a copy of this. Today we are talking about the partial kingdom, and just so you remember where we've been, we've talked about the pattern of the kingdom, which was, Genesis 1 and 2. We talked about the perished kingdom in Genesis chapter 3. We've talked about the promised kingdom, kind of looking at Abraham's story a little bit there in Genesis, Genesis 17, that kind of stuff. And so here we move into the partial kingdom. And we begin to get this this fuller picture here of what's coming, right? And in the partial kingdom, we're gonna cover a huge, huge, huge chunk of the Bible. We are gonna hit, we're gonna go from Genesis to Exodus to Samuel, we're kind of working our way through here. So what's going on? Well, so far, as we've talked about the way that the storyline works itself out in the scriptures, is we've looked at three different things, right? We talked about God's people, God's rule and blessing, and God's place. And those have been the three pieces of the puzzle. But there is a fourth piece, and it's here in this partial kingdom part of the story where we get to learn about the next piece of this puzzle, and that is God's king. Now, early on in the story of the people of God, they were promised, that there was the promise of a king, and this king that God would select was going to be a king who would lead with righteousness, with justice, and with compassion and empathy and all of that, right? This is the kind of king that God wanted. The problem is that the people, they were pretty impatient, and we're gonna get to that part of the story here in just a minute. But what do we have? Well, as we walk through this part of the Bible, Genesis 12 through Exodus 18, it really explains for us who God's people are, and He begins to really trace the storyline through Abraham's family, Abraham to Isaac to Jacob, and so on and so forth. And this takes us all the way through Genesis. So God's people are this one family, and through this family, He was going to bless the nations, right? And that's such an incredible promise. And the promise is not just that He would bless the nations. The promise is that He would make Abraham into a nation. Now, for Abraham and his wife Sarah, that was crazy talk because they were old and Sarah was barren. And yet, at the ripe old age, of 99, here she comes. She's pregnant and ready, and she has a child in the story. And so what we have in this moment, at the beginning of this family story, is Abraham's necessity to trust in the promise. God had made him a promise that he would make him into a nation. Against all odds, against all hope, against all natural understanding of anything. And yet, Abraham had to trust it. And this really begins to be the narrative that we see kind of follow this family, follow the people of God from here on out, is there's a necessity to trust, right? To be God's people is to be a people who trust him. It's to be a people who believes in the promise against all odds. So this is the story that we begin to see taking shape. Now, the story is not just for a nation. The story, the promise, Exodus 6:7, God says, I will take you as my own people and I will be your God. This promise we see echoed throughout the story. We see it all the way into Revelation, where we see that line come back to prominence at the end of the Bible, right? You will be my people and I will be your God. That's the beautiful promise. That's the thing that we're waiting for. And so Abraham, just like the rest of us, had to learn that it's by faith, and that we had to trust, that he had to trust God by faith, and we had to trust God by faith. And so we have to understand, that there was nothing special about Abraham. He was just some guy. He was just some guy that God called. And God decided to use Abraham and his family to bless the world. To bless the world by showing them that there is grace, that there is mercy, that there is compassion, and that there is love, and that God would make good on his promises. So God's people are reflected in this one family. And so from there, right, we get God's rule and blessing in this time of the partial kingdom. Now, what does that look like? Well, that's expressed in Exodus 19 to Leviticus. And so what do we get here? Well, we get the law, right? God's blessing, God's rule and blessing is through his word and is through his law. And if the people would just trust and would just live out the law and obey it, they would experience great blessing. And if they didn't, they would face consequences. And it was hard, right? And nobody perfectly fulfilled the law. And so God knew nobody would fulfill the law perfectly. And so there was a system put in place for how you deal with your falling short and our falling short and the falling short of the people. And we see all of that laid out in the law as well. But the trajectory of the law is one of grace. It is one of mercy. It is one that points us back to the necessity of faith, the necessity of trust. It's not really about the rituals and all the things. It really does come down to this whole idea of trust and faith. And what we see in that story that starts with the Exodus is we see the God who delivers, and then the God who demands, and the God who draws near. We see this is the trajectory of the story of the people of God, right? So he delivered them from slavery. If you read through the end of Genesis and the story of Joseph, you see how God's people end up in Egypt, and yet that wasn't the promised land. Egypt wasn't what God promised them, right? He didn't promise them that. He promised them Canaan. But they end up there out of God's blessing, out of God's care for them, and yet there comes a time then when the Egyptians were probably overthrown, and a new royal line comes to power that doesn't know of Joseph and doesn't know of the Israelites, and just sees them as a danger. And so they enslave the Israelites. So what happens? Well, the story of the Exodus is God delivering the Israelites from the hand of Egypt, from their slavery. So we see this picture of the God who delivers from slavery. Now, there is a greater slavery that we all experience, the slavery to sin, the slavery to our sin sickness, to what is happening inside of us, right? And God can deliver us from that as well. And Exodus points us even in that direction. But we get this picture of the God who delivers. But he doesn't deliver us with a cheap grace. He is a God who demands. He demands that his people, who he delivered, who he loved, he demands that they would live life of justice, lives of righteousness. This is the life that God demands from us. The same life that he demanded from them, he demands from us. Right? To do justice and to walk humbly with him. This is what the law at Sinai is calling them to. Right? This is what we are supposed to be about. And so he is the God who demands. He is the God who delivers, and he is the God who demands. But not only that, he is also the God who draws near. And that gets us to our next piece here, the place. Where is God in all of this? Well, he is in the tabernacle. He is in this tabernacle, this traveling tent that went everywhere with the people, where God dwelled among his people. So he is not a God who is far off. He is not a God who sits atop a mountain and is looking down at the people and is judging them, or is looking at them as some sort of bit of entertainment. No, this is a God who dwells among us, the God who draws near. What a beautiful picture. The God we serve draws near to us. Right? And doesn't that remind us of another story that we heard all the way back in Genesis chapter 1 and 2? Right? The God who draws near, the God who was present, the God who walked in the cool of the day with Adam and Eve. This is the God that we are following. This is the story of the God who draws near, who wants to be with his people. He's not just asking his people to go do something. No, he is drawing near to his people. This, my friends, is the beautiful God whom we serve. This is the God that we get to follow. And so we get to see this picture painted of the God who draws near in the tabernacle. So we have the God who delivers. We have the God who demands something from us because it's not a cheap grace. But then also the God who draws near. He's able to draw near because of the sacrifice, because we are able to be cleansed through his deliverance by faith. And this ultimately gets done in the person of Jesus, who is the ultimate tabernacle, who is the ultimate expression of God dwelling among us, of God living with us. This, do you see how the story begins to build? Do you see how the story begins to take us towards this beautiful climax of the cross and of the resurrection? This is where we are going. This is the trajectory, and it's pretty awesome. But the story continues, right? And we have this, we kind of have this thing where in Deuteronomy, we have blessings and curses. We get to see this picture of what's happening. In Joshua, you have the conquest of the land, and you see God bringing the people back into Canaan, back into the promised land. And this is an amazing time of fulfillment of God's promises. So now that the people are in the land, what do we have? You know, how does this work itself out? Well, we experience a partial fulfillment time under the judges, right? God raises up judges, and it is this cycle of sin and grace. The people forget God. God raises up a judge. The people come back to faith in their God. And then there is grace, right? And then what happens? Another cycle. And you read through Judges, and it is this cycle over and over and over again. And so then we get to the story of Samuel, the last judge. He's the final judge in the story. And I think this is the turning point of the story of the people of God. They're not satisfied. You see, God had a picture in his mind, in his economy, of what a king should be, God's king. And really, ultimately, he wanted to be their king. The idea really, truly, was for God to be the king of his people. But in 1 Samuel chapter 8, we have the turning point. We have the people who are saying, listen, Samuel, you're old. You're about to die. Your five-year plan is to not to die because you're old. And your sons are idiots. They are not fit to lead us. They're an absolute disaster. Samuel's kids were a mess. You think pastors' kids today are crazy? Samuel's sons were probably the patron saint of pastors' kids, maybe. I don't know. But good grief. These guys were off the rails. And so the people come to Samuel and say, we need a king. And here's the kicker. We want to be like all the other nations. And that, my friends, is the turning point. The people of God no longer wanted to look different. They no longer wanted to be special. They no longer wanted to be a reflection of the Creator God who was giving blessing and bringing blessing to the whole world. That is not what they wanted to be any longer. No. They wanted to be like all the other nations. And so so God tells Samuel, give it to them. They want it. They want this king that looks like all the other nations. By all means, you give it to them. But know this, Samuel, they're not rejecting you. They are rejecting me. And then he lays out this picture, this awful picture of what the king is going to be like. It's horrific. It's just one of those images where you're like, really? This is what you want? And the people are like, yeah, this is what we want. Let me read this to you. And, you kind of hear this and think, what were they thinking? I mean, God gave them an out. But here it is. Samuel told all the words. This is 1 Samuel 8, starting verse 10. Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who are asking him for a king. He said, this is what the king who will reign over you will claim as his rights. He will take your sons and make them serve you with his chariots and horses, and they will run in front of his chariots. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and others to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants. Your male and female servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. When that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. But the people refused to listen to Samuel. No, they said, we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, with a king to lead us, to go out before us and fight our battles. Man, this is it. That's the turning point. And that's what they got. And really, all the kings were like that. I mean, you know, the first guy, Saul, he wasn't, he was all, he was pretty, he wasn't all that great. And then you have David, a man after God's own heart, right? He wasn't really much better. Let's be honest. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, raped Bathsheba, who, you know, killed Bathsheba's husband. I mean, he was a bad dude. He was a bad dude. His hands were so bloody that God said, you can't build the temple. You can't build me a house because your hands are too bloody. And we get David's story in 2 Samuel. And then, you know, we get the story of David's son Solomon and the kings after that. And all of a sudden the kingdom rips and splits apart and the monarchy comes to a crashing end. Because the people reflected their kings, imperfect, broken men who simply led the people astray. The monarchy ultimately is best described as disobedience, division, and decline. God had fulfilled his promise. Under Solomon, you had the full-on picture of the promised land. Everything God had promised land-wise, it came under the rule of Solomon. And then it all fell away. Why? Because of disobedience, disbelief, lack of trust. Remember what we talked about? What is it that God demanded? God demanded trust. He demanded them to trust him. He demanded them to live lives of righteousness and justice. And these were the things that they did not do. And so what did they experience? They experienced exile. And the kingdom comes crashing down. We'll pick that story up next time. But let's summarize this, right? Let's hit the summary. Let's hit the high point. God's people in the partial kingdom, the Israelites, right? The people that came out of Egypt, Abraham's family, the Israelites, they're God's people. God's place, Canaan and the Jerusalem temple. Ultimately, that was God's place because what did God do? God delivered, God demanded, and then God dwelt among them. He drew near. He drew near ultimately through the temple in Jerusalem. And then how did the people experience God's rule and blessing? The law and the king. God's rule came through his law, came through his words that they were to trust and they were to seek to live out. And then his blessing was supposed to come through the king. But the king, the true king, the king who was to be God, was rejected by the people. And they asked for something else. They asked for a king that would look like all the other nations because they didn't want to look different anymore. So that's where we sit here with the partial kingdom. The partial kingdom, you know, under Solomon for a period of time looked about as good as it was going to be. But next time we look at what comes next after the partial kingdom is dismantled. We have the prophesied kingdom. And that takes a whole different spin on this. So, my friends, come back next week. And remember, do me a favor. Share this. If this has been helpful to you, let someone else know. And, you know, remember, make sure you subscribe to danielmrose.com and catch my knee-jerk devotionals. And I'd encourage you to share those with somebody as well. But until next time, love well, my friends.